This is 1A. I'm Jonquilin Hill, host of the podcast Through the Cracks, sitting in for Jen White in Washington. It's been 60 years since the birth control pill first hit the market in the U.S. The pill transformed lives, but when it comes to contraceptive options, it's no longer the end-all be-all. Scientists keep having breakthroughs. Consumer needs and consumer concerns keep evolving beyond the options behind the counter, including for Crystal in Webster, New York.
I have 5 kids who are all a failure of one sort of birth control or another. I missed a pill. My IUD fell out. We tried to do natural family planning. I would love it if there was a male birth control because I'm hesitant to have my husband get a vasectomy. And I don't want to go on the hormone birth control because I don't like the way it makes me feel. I feel like he should be the one who's responsible, but that hasn't really worked out so well for me in the past.
Today, we're wrapping up our birth control series with a look at the future of contraception. Joining us now is scientist Diana Blythe. She's the program chief of the Contraceptive Development Program at the National Institute of Health. Diana, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Dr. Mitchell Crinan. He's an OBGYN and the director of family planning at the UC Davis Health System. Dr. Crinan, it's good to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
So, Dr. Crinan, on 1A, we've been talking all week about birth control, and it's tied to the 60th anniversary of the pill hitting the market. I'd love to start by getting your reflection on the past 60 years and how the science and the culture around contraceptive have changed over time.
Well, I think the important thing is that women have had the ability to control if and when they get pregnant. And that was just a major breakthrough when you go back 60 years, the idea that they could decide their own future was empowering. And they were willing to accept side effects or potential complications because of the dramatic impact an unintended pregnancy could have on their lives. As time has gone on, we've realized that we can provide a safer, even more effective methods with less side effects. And I think the innovations are driven by both science as well as patient needs.
Diana, what about for you? How are you reflecting on the past 60 years?
Well, I agree with what Mitch has just said. It has empowered women, and in a way that nothing ever did before. And it has created opportunities to for advancement in career or for having children when you feel the time is best.
Diana, let's start with some basics. When did scientists start earnestly studying and developing male birth control options other than condoms?
I would say I'm aware of some really wonderful studies in the 60s in which they found a drug that would stop sperm production. The problem is that if it was taken in conjunction with alcohol, it caused serious abdominal problems, and so it was abandoned. But since that time, we've known that there are ways to use the hormonal system the same way we use it in females to regulate the production of an egg. We can regulate the production of sperm, similar hormones, similar feedback system. The process in the testes is we need a very high concentration of testosterone to make sperm. But if we give another hormone, it will feed back and shut down the local testosterone in the testes. Once that happens, the sperm production stops. But if the testosterone in the blood is too low, then there won't be normal sexual function. So we have to do both, where we shut down the testicular testosterone so that sperm production doesn't happen, but we replace with serum or blood testosterone at a level where everything functions normally. We've learned how to do that. We have a lot of hormones that can do that, and we're currently in the process of doing that now in a large study in couples, and I wish that your person in Minneapolis was closer to one of our sites because he would want to enroll in one of the sites for birth control for men.
Diana, you started to get into this a bit, but at the NIH, you're currently testing a type of male birth control that's gel-based. What exactly does it do? How does it work?
So there are two hormones, as similarly to the way they would work in a female system. The one hormone, which is called nesterone, will feed back to tell the brain not to make the hormone responsible for making a hormone in the testes known as testosterone. So it's a very complex system, but one that we understand very well. So if we give the first hormone, nesterone, it stops the brain hormone, it stops the testosterone in the testes, and it stops sperm production. Now, again, if we don't replace that testosterone in the blood, the man wouldn't feel well. So we add a second hormone, which is testosterone, which is currently on the market as a low testosterone therapy. And so if we give them back the testosterone that we've shut down locally in the testes, everything will function very normally. And we've now recruited couples, and the study is being done not on in Bethesda at NIH, but at a number of sites around the country. We currently have 5 sites in the United States and 2 in the UK, 1 in Sweden, Italy, Chile, and Kenya, all involved in this study. They're all recruiting couples. The couples agree to be part of the study. It takes a really long time to demonstrate for regulatory agencies that this is going to work, and it's going to work well, and it's going to be safe, and so forth. So they basically commit to being in the study for almost 2 years. They begin to use the product. We monitor the man's sperm. When it gets down below 1 million per milliliter, which still sounds like a lot of sperm, but men generally make 1,000 sperm per heartbeat, which is a lot. And that's about several hundred million sperm per ejaculate. If we can shut that down to 1 million per milliliter or less, that we know that is going to be effectively contraceptive. So when he gets down to that level, the woman stops using her method. And then this is the method they use for a full year. And at the end of that year, he stops the treatment. She goes back on her method. His sperm come back to normal, and everyone is happy. And in some cases, we've had couples who've finished that year and wanted to get pregnant, and they have, and had have had a baby, and all is well. So we're pretty optimistic and enthusiastic about this. Could be a real product. And we have some testimonies from some of the men who finished the year who say they really like it, they wish they could continue on it, and their female partner is saying, I wish he could continue on it, and that I don't have to go back on my method. So we're getting feedback that this can and will work, and that the partner, the female partner, will trust her male partner to, you know, be responsible, and all good things.
We're discussing the future of contraception. We'll be back with more from you and our guests in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from Wells Fargo, donating approximately $420 million through its Open for Business Fund to help women and diverse-owned small businesses rebuild from the pandemic. So far, the effort is helping protect an estimated 66,000 small business jobs nationwide. More at wellsfargo.com/together.
Investigations into police use of force and misconduct were secret in California until now. We've sifted through hours of interrogation tape to find out who does the system of police accountability really serve and who does it protect. Listen now to every episode of the new podcast On Our Watch from NPR and KQED.
Let's get back to our conversation about the future of contraception and continue answering your questions.
Dr. Crinan, before we left off, we were talking about trials, and I'm wondering if you're seeing a particular sample size of male participants in the trial that you're running who are really enthusiastic about the idea of male birth control. What are you hearing from them, and are they satisfied?
Well, we've been very lucky in the Sacramento region, and actually a lot of Northern California, to have in a huge number of very interested couples. It's been very pleasing to me as someone who's been very involved in contraceptive development over the last 30 years for females to see how many men really feel the desire and almost obligation to want to step up and be a part of preventing pregnancy. Now, granted, we're seeing the people who want to do this. There are probably many people out there who say this isn't for me, but that's true along many lines of contraception, whereas women and couples will say, I'm not interested in this method, but I'm interested in something else. But the passion that both the couples have and the men for wanting to take the responsibility and be a part of the solution has really been incredible. And I'm actually overly impressed with these young men who really feel this is an important part of moving towards the future and making lives better, not only for themselves, but for other people.
We also got this comment from Taylor on Facebook, who writes, "There definitely should be male birth control by now in our society. It shouldn't be solely dependent on women for this reproductive protocol. The fact that there isn't really shows that birth control and the politics around it is just another way for men to try to control female bodies." Diana, I want to bring that back up for a moment and talk about the cultural implications of male birth control, or rather, the lack of it. There's a clearly significant scientific breakthrough, but to Taylor's point, why has it taken so long? What barriers have you faced in development?
Well, I think that one of the barriers had been a formulation issue. There is no male pill because, as I said, we have to replace the testosterone, but you can't do it orally. If you try to take oral testosterone, it requires dosing several times a day, and that would never be practical. So we had to find a way of delivering the testosterone either by modification of the molecule to make it last longer if it's taken by mouth, or in this case, we're using it in a transdermal formulation, which forms a reservoir in the skin and is released slowly over the 24-hour period. It's a very new method in terms of application, but it's working really well, and it gives men the testosterone they need. One thing I will say is I don't envision women will all stop their methods as soon as the male birth control hits the market. But with birth control pills, a lot of failures happen because of forgetting. And in this case, for the male method, it could have a failure due to forgetting. But if both people are taking a method, it's less likely that one forgetting is going to be the problem, and they will sort of balance each other. So I think there's an opportunity for that as well.
Dr. Crinan, for 60 years, the onus to take medication to prevent pregnancy has solely been on the person that can get pregnant. Culturally speaking, what would it mean for male birth control to be on the market?
Well, we have had condoms during that time, so there is the potential for the man to contribute, but not with a method that has high or very good efficacy. And I think what we've seen happens naturally when we have new methods that have very good or very high efficacy is that people and providers learn about them and there's a cultural shift. We've seen that over the last 20 years with IUDs, for example. If you went back 20 years ago, very few women in the United States used an IUD, whereas now it's the fourth most commonly used method of contraception by couples in the United States because it's highly effective, it offers many other benefits. And as people learned more about it and felt more comfortable with it and realized that it's not for all, but for many, many people, it provides incredible opportunities, we've seen that shift. And I think we'll see the same thing with male contraception. There'll be some excitement initially, but people will want to learn about it and understand it more. And I think once the studies are done, and keep in mind, we're still many, many years away from something being on the market, but we're much closer than we were even 5 years ago. But it will enter the market, people will learn about it, and we'll see what develops culturally. I envision a world, though, where men will be not the sole contraceptors, or women will be the sole contraceptors. For the purposes of studies, it has to be just the man, as Diana was alluding to. It's used by itself because we can't prove it works if the woman is also using a method. However, in real life, I envision a world where women are using their birth control pill and the man is using his birth control gel, and together they have a very highly effective way of preventing pregnancy. One by itself will be good. Both will be highly, highly effective.
Dr. Crennan, in the run-up to the series, I had a conversation with a few of my friends who are men, and they said they would not take male birth control if it was available. Where do you think that attitude comes from, and to what extent do you think that attitude will change as medication becomes available?
Well, I think some of it is fear and fear of side effects. And I always love when we talk to couples about this and we're going over the potential side effects, and you can see the man's eyebrows go up a little when we talk about there's potential for mood changes or feeling a little different, especially in the first few months that you're using the gel. And any hesitancy on his part is usually met very quickly by the woman of, what do you think I've been going through with my birth control for many, many years? So I think a lot of it is, again, educating men, making them realize that their jewels are no better than the woman's jewels, and that it's time for them to realize this is a part of life. And again, it will be a culture shift that I think will move relatively quickly, but it won't be for everybody. But it will be, I think, an important part of the advancement of couples being able to control if and when they get pregnant.
It's funny that you mentioned side effects, because Laurel tweeted, "What do pharma companies need to see to convince them to invest in birth control for men? I remember one clinical study where men experienced side effects like acne and mood swings, the same side effects women have experienced for decades on FDA-approved birth control." Dr. Crennan, what's your reaction to that?
And actually, the studies that were stopped before, it was because of an excessive amount of those side effects. And I think part of it is, again, finding hormones that may cause some of those side effects, but at very low rates. It's always a way of finding something that both works very well and is acceptable to the majority of users. You're never going to have something that 100% of the time avoids every side effect, but you're working to provide another opportunity for the couples to find a method that works for them. What's nice with this gel is it's incredibly impressive. We do have some men who do have side effects that say, I can't continue, but the vast majority say, wow, I can't believe I'm using this gel every day and I feel no different. I can function sexually. I have my normal amount of energy. Everything is normal for the majority, not for all, but for the majority. And it's just incredibly impressive to see.
Dr. Crennan, according to a recent survey by the Kaiser Family Foundation, people try an average of 3 to 4 different birth control methods throughout their lives, and 90% of people say no birth control option has all the features they want. Those feel like really bleak numbers. What are some of the biggest concerns your patients have when it comes to what's on the market right now?
Well, I would say those aren't bleak numbers, because people change their needs or desires over time. Some people want a method that's going to last them just for a short period of time because they're planning pregnancy, and some people then later in life may want to space their pregnancy or may notice a change in their periods, whereas before they didn't care if the method really lowered the amount of flow they had, whereas later in life they may want something that has more impact on their flow. So just like we try different foods or different diets during our lifetime, that this isn't that much different. As far as looking ahead, I think the idea is to continue to develop methods that all of this information really shows why we need to continue to develop additional options for men and women, because not everything is a one-size-fits-all. Even, for example, within injectables, right now we have one shot that's available, but it would be great if we could develop a shot that maybe had less side effects, that was better tolerated. So the importance of continuing to find things that can help people control their destiny and control their future is really important.
We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Wyzant, a one-to-one tutoring alternative to online classes where you can learn face-to-face online. Get help with tackling new subjects and career skills, or just catching up. Wyzant lists thousands of personal instructors in over 300 subjects, available for live, individualized lessons with their online learning platform. Head to wyzant.com to find your perfect instructor. Love it or your first hour is free. Because at Wyzant, we take learning personally.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Now, let's get back to our conversation about the future of contraception and continue answering your questions. Joining us now is Sandra Pelletier. She's the CEO of Evofem Biosciences, a company that focuses on innovation in women's and reproductive health. Evofem is the parent company of a new birth control medication called Phexxi, which was approved by the FDA last year. Sandra, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, Sandra, last year, Phexxi became the first non-hormonal birth control medication approved by the FDA. How does Phexxi work exactly?
Well, it is a gel that comes in a prefilled applicator, 5 milliliters of gel, and a prescription is a box of 12 prefilled applicators. And how it works is a normal vaginal pH is 3.5 to 4.5. So when semen enters, or pathogens like chlamydia or gonorrhea, that pH rises to 7 or 8, which makes a woman get pregnant and makes her susceptible to infections like chlamydia and gonorrhea. Our product is acid buffering, so it simply goes into the vaginal cavity. It's very viscous and bioadhesive, so it stays in place. But the acid buffering component is what makes it inhospitable for semen and certain sexually transmitted infection pathogens to survive. So it just helps a vagina maintain its normal vaginal pH of 3.5 to 4.5 with no hormones whatsoever.
So where do you see the demand for non-hormonal birth control right now?
Well, this might you might find staggering. In the United States right now, there are 23 million women that identify as being beyond hormones. And as I was listening to your program, they are some of the women who called in and said, I've tried pills, I've tried patches, I've tried IUDs, and I have suffered. And the side effects are real. And interestingly, oftentimes, they're not really talked about. And a lot of young women, unbelievable amounts of young women have contacted us to say that they were put on an antidepressant or put on an anti-anxiety product. And when someone really looked at what was happening, it was really switching their birth control that made a difference. So there's 23 million women that are beyond hormones. But the other thing I want to add is that there's also 800,000 women that get cancer every year. And many of those women can never use a hormone again. And so our product, Phexxi, is a perfect solution for those women who are conquering or have beaten cancer and for the women who no longer want to use a hormone.
Sandra, tell us what we know about Phexxi's efficacy and failure rate.
Yeah, so the efficacy rate on our label in perfect use is 93%, in typical use, 86%. But what matters is that I think all the guests on the program understand that there is an incredible amount of clinical rigor that's required to do studies to meet the FDA standards. So in our study, we did have to include failures of women who didn't use the product at all. We had to include failures of women who used the product after having intercourse, or women who used the product hours before. Our label states that it must be used within an hour, so you can use it immediately before or within an hour of intercourse. And so what we found in real-world use is that many women say, look, I've got this. I am in control of my experience in my own body. It's so incredibly easy to use. So although you say, well, 93%, frankly, when you look at the rate of pregnancy doing nothing, but most importantly, when you look at the fact that these women, 23 million, have chosen, and many of them are having sex without any protection at all, Phexxi is, we say, look, the most important product is a one that a woman can and will use, and a product that she's not going to suffer from hormonal side effects, frankly. So that's the efficacy rate, but we see in real-world use that when women start using it, they find that it is, frankly, the perfect product for their lifestyle.
Sandra, is Phexxi something you can use in conjunctions with other forms of birth control? I think of people who use the pill with condoms or an IUD with condoms.
Yes, it definitely concomitant use is acceptable. And we have seen many, not many, we've seen some women do that. Interestingly, most women use it as their only form of contraception, but it definitely can be used in combination.
Diana, there's a growing number of people voicing concerns about hormones and birth control, particularly the pill. But what do we know about the trade-offs here? Is hormonal birth control still the most effective option out there right now?
Well, that's a complicated question, and I would say that there's a lot of tendency to lump hormones all together. And if we don't have a certain amount of the right hormones in the body, then the body's not going to function properly. So to say we don't want hormones is too broad a brush. You have to know what hormones you're talking about, how much, and make sure that they're in a proper balance. That's why we've developed a lot of different methods that have different types of hormones in them, because we know that one woman will respond really well to a hormone, another woman will not. And then if we do use a different hormone, that may reverse. So it's a complicated question, but we do know that on the whole, women who have used hormonal birth control are protected from certain forms of cancer and some other conditions. They, you know, have longer lifespans on average overall. So I think that the idea that hormones are bad is in part a narrative that is pushed, not necessarily in the best, you know, with the best motivation.
And Diana, how is the NIH prioritizing lower doses of hormones in its new products? Is this the new frontier of birth control?
Well, in terms of lower doses, I would say what we're looking for are methods that are going to be safe for all women. We are looking at lower doses of a synthetic estrogen that, as Mitch mentioned earlier, can lead to an increased risk of blood clots. So we don't use that hormone in any of the products we're trying to develop. We use either a natural estradiol, which is the same hormone that women have if they don't use any other method, or we're using a progestin-only injectable, which is a very safe drug that seems to have some protective effects, but does not increase the risk of blood clots at all. And again, all of the methods we're trying to develop, we are doing so with the knowledge that these will be safer for women who have any kind of a risk condition that would suggest that they shouldn't use a certain type of hormonal product that wouldn't be best for them. So the hormones we're working on are very safe products that we think women will like.
Sandra, I understand Evofem is currently testing a second use for Phexxi, which is STD prevention. Can you tell us more about that?
I can. And STD prevention is very significant. In the United States, even the CDC says that chlamydia is on the rise for the sixth year in a row. Gonorrhea is on the rise. There's 1.8 million cases of chlamydia, over 600,000 for gonorrhea, which is antibiotic resistant. And there are no methods that are indicated for the prevention of either of those. And so when you think about innovation in women's healthcare, frankly, you know, coming out with different delivery systems is fine, but one of the things that's so important is this product, Phexxi, indicated now for non-hormonal contraception, we will expand the label, and not only can you have sex with a non-hormonal contraceptive method, but you will also be able to eventually be protected from getting chlamydia and gonorrhea. But the other comment I want to make that I think is so important for this program and dialogue is that women don't have sex every day. When you do research with women, you find out that on average, they have sex once or twice a week. So the idea that we have developed a product that's about empowering women, our tagline is not just words on a website, it's science with a soul. It's about empowering women to have sex on demand when they want to. They have a product they can use only when they need it, never when they don't. And we say, I understand that if women can and want to use a hormone, they're not our target audience. But many women say, when I'm walking my dog, when I'm exercising, when I'm at my child's recital, I don't need birth control. I want something I can use on demand, like men have had condoms for years. So that's why Phexxi is a real innovation. And that's why having something that's on demand, we think is absolute game changer, not just for contraception, but to your point, eventually, at the end of this year, we'll have full enrollment in the phase 3 study for prevention of chlamydia and gonorrhea, and we'll have a top-line readout in June of 2022.
Dr. Crennan, I think anyone with a female body can attest to the fact that navigating all of this can be really overwhelming. What advice do you have for patients when they go to their doctor's office? What questions should they be asking their providers when they're looking for birth control?
Well, Jonklin, I think you hit the nail on the head. There's just so much. I mean, so much so that it's a specialty for doctors to really fully understand all the intricacies of contraceptives and the different hormones and how they're delivered. So your primary care doctor, your OBGYN, can be of great help in helping you learn more about these things. But also what I say to my patients, to my friends, to their daughters, is make sure that you are advocating for yourself, to make sure that your doctor isn't just saying, here, use this, but is explaining everything to you. Or I should say your clinician. It could be a nurse practitioner, anybody who you're getting your health care from. But advocate for yourself to make sure that you're getting all the education to understand the pros and cons of the different methods. And if you can't get what you need, then request to go see a specialist to say, I need more time, I need more information so that I can have control over if and when I get pregnant.
And Diana, what about you? What advice do you have for people looking for different forms of birth control?
I would say that know what the effectiveness of the method that you're thinking about using is. Know what the side effects could be. And then choose based on the information. I think if a woman really is needing to avoid pregnancy, she doesn't want to use a method that has a high risk of failure. If she's okay with that, if that's not a problem, then she might be willing to use a less effective method that's more convenient. So I would say it depends on what the woman's need is, and she should be honest with what she wants, and she should be knowledgeable about what the product she's going to take is, and that's by asking questions.
Diana Blythe is the program chief of the Contraceptive Development Program at the National Institute of Health. Dr. Mitchell Crinan is an OBGYN and the Director of Family Planning at the UC Davis Health System. And Sandra Pelletier is the CEO of EvoFem Biosciences, a company that focuses on innovation in women's and reproductive health. EvoFem is the parent company of a new birth control medication called Phexxi, which was approved by the FDA last year. Today's producer was Catherine Fink. Our podcast was produced by Barb Aguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jonquilin Hill. This is 1A.